How much is a dental practice worth? If you're a buyer and you're buying a dental practice, how do you know if you're paying a fair price? How do you know if you're paying too much? How do you know if it's a good deal? How are dental practices even valued? Who decides how much a practice is worth? I'm going to go over every single one of those today, and stick around to the end because I'm going to talk about how you as a buyer can make sure that you are paying a fair price for a practice. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist, a former practice owner, and now I help dentists buy dental practices. And today, we are going to look at how do you determine how much a dental practice is worth. I'm going to show you some clips from a group of dental practice brokers called ADS who were asked the question, how do you know how much a dental practice is worth?
The majority of practice value is based on the net income of that practice.
There is a range depending on where we are, but on balance, I'd say if you looked at 62-63% of collections, you're going to be really close.
As we do a 12 months cash flow spreadsheet. Now, buyer's net is not a seller's net.
Call your local dental broker to find out.
Well, I don't really know. Everyone thinks they have an idea of what it's worth.
Your practice is worth whatever the buyer's willing to pay for it and whatever you're willing to accept.
All right, so I just showed you a few clips there. I recommend you watch the full video. I'm going to link to it in the description. So when you first reach out to practice brokers, they're generally going to send you a packet of documents, and somewhere in that packet, you're going to find a valuation. This is a document that the broker will generally write up to try to support their purchase price. While there are all sorts of terms that are used in these valuation reports to try to make them seem more official and more important than they actually are, there's really a few types of valuation methodologies that are used. And I'm going to group them into a few categories, as you're going to see here. The first is the asset-based valuation. The idea with the asset-based valuation is that you look at all of the equipment, the supplies, everything that's in the office, you add up the values of those things, and that should give you the value of the dental practice. The problem is, when you are buying a dental practice, the primary thing you are buying is access to patients. The actual equipment and supplies in the office generally only make up a small percentage of the actual purchase price of a practice, usually 20% or less. How are you going to value a dental practice based upon the value of the assets if the assets only make up a small portion of the value of the practice? So this is why we have to use the other valuation methods. The next method, and this is the method that a lot of dentists initially think about when they're looking at practices, is valuing the practice based upon its revenue. With a dental practice, revenue is almost always equal to collections. They're used interchangeably. Oftentimes, revenue is used as a starting point because it's an indication of the size of the practice. Now, there are two main problems, though, with using revenue as a way to value the practice. The first problem is that the seller's revenue is not necessarily going to be the buyer's revenue. Just because the seller produced $1 million last year does not mean that if a buyer comes in, that buyer is going to be producing $1 million. Sometimes you'll have practices where the seller is treatment planning extremely aggressively, sometimes even unethically, doing things like crowns on patients that don't need crowns, or potentially doing a lot of specialty procedures that the buyer is simply not able to or just doesn't want to perform. And you can get into a situation where the buyer comes in and does significantly less in revenue in the year after the acquisition than the seller did the year before. On the other hand, though, if you're smart and you find a practice where the seller was underproducing relative to the number of patients, I've seen dentists come in, they buy a practice that in the previous year had only done $700,000 or $800,000. And in the first year that they own the practice, they're doing 1.3, 1.4, or 1.6 million, sometimes as much as doubling the revenue of the practice, just because they purchased the right practice where the seller had been underproducing relative to the number of patients at that practice. The second problem with using revenue as a valuation method is the revenue of a practice is not necessarily equal to the purchase price of the practice. Generally, once revenue is calculated, it's multiplied by some percentage, some sort of multiple in order to determine what the purchase price is. And there is no standardized percentage or multiple. So even if you could guarantee what the buyer's revenue is going to be in their first or second year of ownership at this practice, you still do not know what the purchase price is going to be because you have to multiply that revenue by some percentage in order to get the purchase price. So all of these numbers are just made up. And when a broker is evaluating a practice, they can do all of these calculations to calculate revenue and make this huge long document that looks extremely well done. They spent all this time on this fancy looking document, but then right at the end, they just multiply it by whatever percentage they want and then they get their purchase price. What's the point of even doing all of those calculations if they can just choose whatever percentage they want there at the end of the document. And the reason is they're just trying to make this look more official so that you as the buyer do not negotiate on that price. They want to make it appear as if this valuation that they use is similar to an appraisal on a house where there are tons of comps where you can get accurate appraisals. With dental practices, it's not possible to get an accurate valuation that way. And so you can literally just use whatever number you want for that percentage multiple in order to get the purchase price when you use a revenue-based approach. So the next way you can value a practice is on the net income of the practice. In theory, net income should be the perfect number to use when you value a practice because that's literally how much money you're going to be making at that practice. So that should be the perfect number to value a practice, right? The problem is net income is even more difficult to pin down than revenue. As a result of tax laws, businesses are incentivized to decrease their net income number as low as possible as to decrease their tax liability. Businesses will literally pay accountants tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to find ways to reduce their taxable income. And so you can look at one dental practice and another dental practice. They might be producing the same amount. They might have the same amount of expenses, and the dentist might actually be making the same amount of money. But because they hired a different accountant and are using different accounting methodologies, the net income numbers might be completely different. Number two, even more so than revenue, the seller's net income is not necessarily that great of an indication of what the buyer's net income is going to be. Net income is simply revenue minus expenses. And we already talked about how revenue can dramatically change when a new dentist buys a practice. The other thing that can also change quite a bit is expenses. Sometimes the seller is potentially using a laboratory that is significantly more expensive than the market average. Maybe they're using a supply company that's significantly more expensive. You as a buyer are going to be able to come in and completely change the expenses at this practice. On the other hand, though, the buyer is probably going to have some expenses that the seller didn't have. For instance, the practice loan. The seller probably doesn't have a practice loan, but you as a buyer are going to have to worry about this practice loan. Also, sometimes if the seller owns the building, they might be paying themselves rent that is significantly below market average. When you as a buyer come in, they're probably going to charge you a lot more for rent, and so your expenses there are going to go up. There's just so many things that can change between when the seller owns the business and when the buyer acquires the business that it's really, really difficult to pin down exactly what that expense number is going to be. So not only is revenue changing, expenses are changing, so the net income number can vary widely when you buy a practice. I've seen some dentists come in and the seller was extremely profitable, but they come in and they didn't buy the right practice and their net personal net income is significantly lower than what the seller's was. On the other hand, I've seen some buyers who buy the right practice, they come in and their net income is significantly higher than what the seller's was. Another issue with net income, especially when it comes to dental practices, is the owner of the practice in a smaller solo practice is likely going to be the only dentist there, and the dentist is the highest paid employee in an office. How much are you going to pay this dentist as a salary? How much counts as net income? It gets really messy. And then when you start looking at practices where there are two dentists there, oftentimes one of them is an owner and one is an associate, well, then how do you determine what the net income for that practice is? Some money is going to be going to the associate, some is going to be going to the owner as the employee, and some is going to be going to the owner as the owner. If you have a practice that has even more than two dentists, it becomes significantly more difficult to determine the net income number and how that's going to actually apply to the purchase price. Just like with revenue, you had to multiply that number by some sort of percentage in order to get the actual purchase price. It's the same thing with net income. You're going to have to multiply the net income by some sort of multiple in order to determine the purchase price. And there is no agreed upon multiple. It's not, oh, you find revenue and times it by a multiple of three and that gets you the purchase price. So ultimately, you're just making up some sort of multiple number in order to justify this purchase price. And it's really not helpful to use net income to value a practice. Should you look at what the net income number was before you buy an office? Absolutely. You need to know all of these numbers. You need to understand them. You need to actually figure out, why did the dentist make this amount of money that year? What do I need to do as a buyer in order to replicate that or surpass that? And if I'm not going to be able to replicate that or surpass that, then this probably isn't the right office to buy. But using that number in order to actually calculate the purchase price of a practice is really just not very helpful because you have to use some sort of made up multiple number that varies widely from different practices. So the next way you can value a practice, and usually this is more of a supplementary method that's used after the other methods have already been calculated, is the per patient valuation. You calculate how many patients there are, then you multiply that by a number in order to determine what the practice is worth. Honestly, why this method is a lot more simple than the net income or the revenue approach, I actually think it's better in a lot of ways, but there's still a huge number of problems with just using this method. First of all, how do you determine how many patients are in a practice? I've seen some practice brokers go off of how many patients were seen in the last 36 months. Some say in the last 24 months. Some say in the last 12. Some say how many are on the recall schedule rather than just seen at the practice. Some will actually go into the practice management software and look at the schedule and actually see how many patients there are to practice. Some are simply just going to export some outdated report from the practice management system that might not even be accurate or up to date. So how do you actually know the number of active patients? At the end of this video, I'm going to link to a previous video I did where we actually looked at the way to calculate this number for you as a buyer. But just initially, when we're evaluating a practice, it's almost impossible to come to an agreed upon number for the actual number of patients at a practice. And then even if we had a guaranteed agreed upon number for the number of active patients, what multiple are you going to use in order to get from patients to value? Are you going to charge $500 per patient? Are you going to charge $1,000 per patient? I've seen it range all the way down from $200 to $300 all the way up to $3,000 or $4,000 per patient. And so it's just a huge range of numbers that are sometimes used in this valuation methodology. Really, the broker is just putting whatever multiple they want to put in there in order to justify the purchase price that they have set. A problem with all of these valuation methodologies is there are a ton of factors that aren't even included in these. I mean, things like location. If you're in a city versus if you're in the suburbs versus you're in a rural area, the practices are going to sell for different amounts. What types of insurances are accepted? A practice that is composed of PPO and cash paying patients is going to be valued completely differently from a practice that's seeing Medicaid and HMO and DMO patients. Size and capacity of the office, number of operatories, whether there's an option to add more operatories, those are very important to know. The general condition of the building and the real estate and the equipment, is how nice is this stuff? How old is it? Are you going to have to come in and do a lot of repairs? Are you going to have to be replacing flooring, painting walls? All of these things need to be taken into account. How many new patients are coming into the practice? Is the practice located in an area that's highly visible from the street, or is it tucked away in some industrial complex where the only patients that are going to come in are the ones that are referred or paid marketing was used in order to acquire these patients? The real estate that the practice is in makes a huge difference. Sometimes the seller owns the real estate and it's very well priced. Sometimes the seller owns the real estate and it's way too big for what you need and you're going to have an extremely high rent payment or mortgage payment if you buy that building. Other times the building is not even available for purchase and you're going to have to rent out from a landlord. What about the staff and the stability of those staff? How long have those staff been at the office? Are they being under or overpaid? So if all of these factors have to be taken into account, why do brokers continue to use these outdated simplified valuation methods? In order to understand this, you need to understand how the practice brokers are getting their business and how they're getting paid. When a dentist decides they want to sell their office, if they don't have someone to sell the office to, and if they're inexperienced with how dental transitions work, they will often go and hire a practice broker. A practice broker is similar to a realtor. You have to pay them 10% of the sales price, usually about 10% commission, in order for them to find a buyer for this practice. I want you to think about that for a second. Some practices are selling for $1.5 to $2 million. If a practice broker gets 10% of $2 million, they have made $200,000 by selling that dental practice. As a result, practice brokers are extremely motivated to sell these practices for the highest price possible. They work for the seller in order to try to increase the purchase price of this practice. The reason these brokers are providing these valuation documents using these valuation methodologies is because they're trying to look more official to the seller who's about to pay them $100,000 to sell this practice. They want to have some sort of document that makes them look official. And when buyers come, they want to have some sort of document that makes them look official to the buyers, that makes it look like they know what they're talking about, to make them look smarter. So they're using all these numbers in order to try to appear smarter to the buyer and to the seller, and ultimately with the goal of selling this dental practice for as much money as humanly possible because they want to get as much money as possible out of their 10% commission. So if none of these valuation methodologies are actually that useful in getting a purchase price, how do the brokers actually decide what price they're going to set these practices at? I'm going to show you another clip from ADS.
Every practice I've been to since 1978, I've had on videotape so I can compare the practices I'm looking at to the practices I sold.
Your practice is worth whatever the buyer's willing to pay for it and whatever you're willing to accept.
Honestly, one would never know how much a practice is worth until it's sold, because the very definition of fair market value of a dental practice or a business is when both buyer and seller agree and nobody's under any compunction to buy or sell, and they both agree on the price and the terms.
So as you just heard, the practice brokers here are saying, ultimately, they're not using net income or revenue or number of patients to set their purchase price. They might look at those numbers to help them find comparable practices, but ultimately, they're going to set their purchase price based upon other practices that they have seen sell, and they're going to try to price this new practice in a similar manner to another practice that has ideally recently sold. When you're purchasing a house, you can go to Zillow and you can look at all of the houses in your area. You can see how much they sold for because that data is public information. But with dental practices, that type of information is not public. There's no Zillow for dental practices, where you can go and see how much another dental practice sold for. Unlike houses, you can often find houses that are fairly comparable, that are fairly similar in size, similar in location. With dental practices, no two practices are the same. They're so incredibly different. And how do you determine if one practice is similar to another? Are you basing it on number of patients? Because remember, we just talked about how it's basically impossible to pin down any of those numbers. So how do you know what to compare a practice to? Ultimately, what the brokers have to do is they just have to guess. They just have to say, how much do I think this practice is going to be able to sell for? And they're going to pick the highest number possible to try to sell the practice at as high a number as possible because they want to get their commission. This is very problematic for you if you are trying to purchase a dental practice, because the person valuing the practice works for the seller. The person valuing the practice wants the practice to sell for as much as possible. You as a buyer have no easy way of viewing the sales price of other practices on the market. And even if you could, no two dental practices are the same. So if you haven't figured this out yet, as a buyer, you are at a huge disadvantage when it comes to determining how much you should pay for a dental practice. So the good news is there is a way that you as a buyer can determine if a purchase price is fair and affordable for you. So stick around because we're about to get to that. But first, I want to show you one more clip from the practice brokers.
I'm often asked by dentists if I represent both buyer and seller. As a normal course of business, I only represent one party. I believe there's a fiduciary responsibility that I have to the owner of the practice and the person who hires me to represent their interests and their interests only.
We recommend always that they get their own counsel, accountants, another broker, someone that understands the numbers of a dental practice to look over that information. They'll typically then make an offer that's negotiated back and forth between the buyer and seller until there's been an agreement made as to what the purchase price is going to be and the terms of that is going to be.
It is important to have a resource such as an advisor that can come into play and say, these are the kinds of things that you need to be aware of, and here's who can help you, or this is how I would suggest that you go about doing this. Or here are your options. These are the things that you can consider doing. Make the choice, but know the ramifications of making each of those decisions.
I just want to say ADS is a really good company because most practice brokers are not going to be this honest with you. You just heard three different practice brokers from the company say, hey, we are not able to represent both you and the seller. The practice brokers here are literally saying, you need to hire your own advisors. The first question I usually get is, well, then should I hire an accountant to evaluate this dental practice? To be clear, I was an accountant before becoming a dentist. I went to undergrad and did 4 years of accounting classes. I never took a class in dental practice valuations in undergrad. Most accountants are not going to be adequately prepared to help you properly evaluate a dental practice. Hiring an accountant to do your practice evaluation would be similar to hiring a plumber to do your electrical work? Are there plumbers that know how to do electrical work? I'm sure there are. But if you need electrical work done, hire an electrician. You need to hire a CPA. You need to hire an accountant to do your taxes after you buy the practice. You need to hire the best accountant you can find because they're going to help you save money on your taxes and they're going to keep you from going to prison for tax fraud. So absolutely, you should hire an accountant. I mean, what's better than saving you money and keeping you from going to prison? So I'm certainly not saying you shouldn't hire an accountant. I'm simply saying when you are having a dental practice evaluated, you need to hire someone who has experience evaluating dental practices. You need someone who has clinical experience, who has actually worked in and run a dental office so that they can look at the documents, so that they can help you with the due diligence, so that they can actually understand the business behind the numbers. I've seen some of the documents that these accountants will give to buyers, and they give them false hope because they're just multiplying things by 10% every year in order to get some magical made-up number in the future that, oh, you're going to make this much money. Also, I've seen some accountants look at some practices that are gold mines. So much opportunity, the perfect practice for you to buy. But the revenue's not very good. The net income's not very good at this practice. And so the accountant says, this probably isn't the best practice to buy. I don't think you should buy this practice. The thing is, the best practices are the ones that are underperforming, the ones that revenue is low in relation to the number of patients, the one where revenue is low because the seller is not doing any specialty work, the one where the revenue, the net income, they're low because the seller's expenses are too high. You can find some of these practices where there is a huge amount of potential, where you as the buyer are likely going to be able to double revenue in the first year. You might go from a practice where the previous year did 200 in net income, and the year you take it over, you're able to make $800,000 in net income, four times the net income because you doubled production without dramatically increasing the expenses. An accountant, though, is going to look at this practice and they're going to say, the net income's not very good. The revenue's not that good. The overhead is high. It's probably not a good practice to buy. The accountant is simply looking at what the seller did. What matters is what you as the buyer are going to be able to do. What matters is the underlying business, the number of patients, that all of those other factors of the valuation that we went into. The accountants are not trained to go and look at the condition of the equipment in the office. The accountants do not understand the health of the practice. They simply only understand the health of the numbers of the selling dentist. I am a buyer's representative. I help dentists evaluate dental practices. Obviously, I'm biased. I think you should work with me. But even if you don't, you need to hire someone with clinical experience that is able to help you evaluate this practice. Do not do this alone. Do not go up against a seller that has a practice broker who has sold 100 practices and who's getting paid $100,000, and you go in by yourself thinking that you're going to outsmart them. Do not think that some accountant who, yeah, he's had a few clients that are dentists in the past, is somehow going to know what a dental practice is worth. If you go in thinking that, you are going to get steamrolled over by these practice brokers if you are not careful. So ultimately, how do you determine if a dental practice is worth buying? How do you determine if a purchase price is fair? The only valuation method that truly matters for you as the buyer is what I like to call the affordability-based valuation. I'm going to show you the six steps in order to do your own affordability-based valuation. First off, you need to calculate the number of active patients at the office. You need to do this yourself. Do not trust what the practice broker is saying. At the end of this video, I'm going to link to another video where I talk a lot more detail about how to figure out this number. I recommend you watch that video after this, but you need to figure out for yourself how many patients are at this practice. Then you need to calculate how much you as a buyer are able to produce per active patient. If you're working at an associate job, you can figure this number out right now. Just figure out, find a time period, maybe a month. How many patients did you see in that month? How much did you produce? There's your number. Then you need to take into account reimbursement rates and insurance participation. If you are working in the same town and taking the same insurances as the practice you're buying, well, then those numbers are probably going to be pretty close. If you're in a different town and potentially taking different types of insurance, like maybe you're at a Medicaid office and this is a PPO office, then you're going to have to adjust your numbers a little bit to take into account that your production is going to be higher at a PPO office than at a Medicaid office. Once you've calculated those numbers, Simply multiply them out, and that's going to give you an estimate of what your revenue is going to be at the office your first year of ownership. Then to get from revenue to net income, you need to subtract out your expenses. The two big numbers that are going to be relatively fixed and hard to change are going to be your rent or your mortgage payment and your payroll number. Payroll can change somewhat over time, depending on who you hire and who you let go. But for the most part, that number is relatively fixed. And rent, oftentimes you're signing a lease and that number is very fixed. Usually there's like a 3% escalation each year to account for inflation. But if you calculate your rent, your payroll, and then I like to take about 20% to allocate towards various variable expenses like lab bills, supplies, et cetera. So take those two numbers and 20% for your variable expenses, subtract those out, and that's going to give you a fairly good estimate of what your net income is going to be for you as the buyer when you buy this practice. Now, if you work with me, I like to calculate this number three different times, one with a low estimate, one with a medium estimate, and one with a high estimate, so that you can get not only a number, but a range for these numbers. So you can get an idea of if my production is on the lower end, this is what my net income is likely going to be. If my production is on the high end, I might make as much as this, but likely I'm going to be somewhere in the middle, and it's likely going to be about this number. That's how I like to calculate these numbers. Now, here is the key and why I call this the affordability-based valuation. Now that you know how much money you're going to be making, the question is, how much can you afford to pay for this practice? If you're buying a larger practice where your revenue is well above $1 million, I like to say you're usually able to afford about 12% of your net income going towards the practice loan payment. If it's a medium-sized practice, 700 to a million, we're looking more like 10%. And if it's a smaller practice, less than 700,000 in revenue, then I want to keep that number less than 8% of your projected net income. So once you multiply your projected net income by either 12, 10, or 8, depending on the size of the practice, you now know what monthly payment you can afford for that practice. Then it's just a matter of calculating, if I buy the practice at this purchase price, is my monthly payment going to be higher or lower than my affordability number? Is it a lot of work to calculate this number? Yes, it's going to be a lot of work, but that's the point. If you are buying a million dollar practice, you need to take the time to sit down and make sure that you can actually afford to buy that practice. Now, are there problems with this? Absolutely. One of the big problems is, just because if you can afford to buy a practice for a certain amount, does that mean you should pay that amount? No, you should try to pay as little as possible for the practice. Do not just pay the first number that you hear from a broker. You need to make sure that number is affordable. And then even if it is affordable, can you get it even lower because you want to pay as little as possible? How do you know if you have room to negotiate? Two big ways you can use to determine if you have negotiating leverage. First off, time on the market. The longer a practice has been on the market, the more negotiating power you're going to have. If the practice was just listed on the market, chances are you're not going to be able to negotiate much on that price because the buyer wants to wait a little while to see if anyone is going to come along and offer the full purchase price. But if a practice has been in the market for 6 months, 8 months, 12 months or more, well, then you're going to be able to come in and have a huge amount of negotiating power because that means over 12 months, no one has wanted to buy the practice at that price. So I wouldn't pay that price. I would try to negotiate it down as far as possible. On the other hand, if a practice is brand new to the market, I've seen some practices that are listed well below what a buyer could afford. And there's been situations where I know multiple buyers are considering a practice. And I've recommended to people, you should probably offer a little bit over the purchase price because it's currently undervalued and this practice is going to be so incredibly profitable for you. You could easily pay an extra $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, maybe even $50,000 in that purchase price. And it's still absolutely worth it to buy this practice. And so number two, if you have never bought a dental practice before, you should hire someone to help you evaluate if this is a fair price and they can give you an idea of if you should negotiate on that price or not. Remember, the seller is paying their broker, their advisor, on the low end, $50,000, sometimes in the high end, $150,000 to $200,000, depending on the size of this practice. It is not unreasonable for you as the buyer to spend $10,000 to $20,000 on hiring your own advisor. Now, one more thing I want to talk about is opportunity cost. If you've made it this far, you clearly are the type that wants to get a good deal. I get it. I also love getting a good deal. When you buy a dental practice, though, less expensive is not necessarily a better deal. If in the pursuit of trying to get a good deal, you end up buying an underproducing practice, you could potentially miss out on hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in lost revenue as a result of buying the wrong practice. Would you rather buy a practice where your net income is only going to be $200,000 per year because you're able to get a practice for a good deal? Or would you rather buy a more expensive practice, but your net income is going to be $1 million a year? Your goal is not to find the least expensive practice on the market. Your goal is to find the most profitable practice on the market. Rather than asking the question, how can I find the cheapest practice? Why don't you ask the question, how can I find the best practice? If you buy the right practice, you're going to be setting yourself up for some incredible success. But if you buy the wrong practice, you might end up worse than you were at your associate job.